Chili Effect is sponsored by WallStreetWindow.com and listeners like you.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media, Chuck O'Shelly.
Well, it is February 16, 2023, allegedly, according to that thing we call a calendar, and this is indeed the show you were looking for. Now, we are live here on a Thursday, and I just finished producing the Jack Blood Show, where his guest for the full 2 hours was Maria Heller. You might want to catch that one when I put out the podcast, and I will. I know I'm going to get all sorts of angry messages about it, but it is what it is, and maybe Jack will get some of that too. By the way, jackblood@hotmail.com. You can go ahead and send him your complaints too. Anyway, enough of that, because now it's my time to talk, and I'm so happy to have Mike Swanson, the guy behind WallStreetWindow.com. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. It is not just about Wall Street. There are a great many things that are discussed and covered over there, and you would be smarter if you were informed at WallStreetJournal.com. WallStreetJournal.com. No. Bad Freudian slip. O'Shelly. Bad. WallStreetWindow.com. That is the site that informs you. WallStreetJournal.com. I don't even know if that's their thing or whatever, but that is where you go and you hit a paywall so that you can get your disinformation and your brainwashing direct. That is if you don't filter it. But WallStreetWindow.com, that's where you can be in the know. Also, you can be in the know by informing yourself of the books written by Mike Swanson. The War State, which I highly recommend, always have, always will, and actually discussed with somebody recently off air in an odd impromptu conversation, along with Why the Vietnam War, which is the first in a series of 3 books, also authored by Mike Swanson, along with a bunch of other cool stuff. So all the links will be in the show notes. Anyway, let's get to my friend, Mike Swanson. How you doing tonight, man?
I'm doing good. It's good to talk to you. How you been?
It's been a weird week, Mike. It really has, and not just because unidentified things are above our heads. But I want to find out what's on your mind first before I get into some of my thoughts. I got a few. So anyway, what is jumping to your attention at the moment? And, you know, last week we talked about JFK stuff. Oh, by the way, the Solving JFK podcast creator was on last night. And I think it was a solid show. I just released it just before airtime earlier, I think. I don't know. I'm losing track of time here. Anyway, it is what it is. I think you'll be interested in it, though, Mike. It's a very well-produced podcast and all that, and I had the creator and writer on last night. He has a separate producer. But anyway, enough of that. What is on your mind and in your wheelhouse?
Well, actually, the Kennedy assassination is one of the things. I've been writing an article that I'm preparing to put out probably in 2 weeks. I've got to contact a couple of the archives to get a response to what I've been digging or trying to find and can't find, I should say. It'll surprise people. I think I'm finding new stuff that new and that people didn't know about, and you know, probably in 2 weeks I'll talk about it with you on your show, I hope.
Oh, definitely. We'll go through the article and examine what it is that you've discovered. You know, that strange thing you're talking about,
well,
where you're going to get sources.
You're
going to actually get sources, yeah, and information directly. I mean, there's a rarity there, because most people that are putting out these articles anymore, it's a whole lot of opinion wrapped around next to nothing or somebody else's opinion.
Well, so. One of the reasons I kind of decided to really try to get back into the topic start to writing another book. I'm not 100% sure what the book, you know, I don't have it organized yet, but it'll be a follow-up to the Vietnam War book. But frankly, we did a show, I think 3 weeks ago or so, and I was kind of realized I need to, you know, I've been doing the stock market stuff or talking about it, writing about it for 25 years now, and I had realized that it's reaching a point where I don't think the market's going to do much this year one way or the other. Really? I don't really think much is going to happen. And saying that, it's just going to make me I lose my audience. So I want to write less about the stock market because I don't really have much to say that is going to interest people, and I don't want to be saying the same thing over and over again.
You know what? I've always wondered about that when somebody has a focus about, you know, which they write. If, you know, you sort of run out of things to say for a little while because there's not much happening, not much new has been discovered, you know, regardless of whether it's a historical event or something that is in progress in real time. Sometimes I think people run out of things to talk about, run out of things to report, so to speak, and then you get this period of just, I don't know what to make of it. So I think it's the more intelligent writer that decides, you know what, let me back off a little until something is there to report. You know, I mean, I know when people run like newscasts and stuff, you have to keep producing content, you know, one way or another. Even pre-internet, you know, well, we're going to have the news tonight one way or another, even if there's no real news. So they came up with puff pieces and fluff pieces, right, to insert. And you had these evergreen pieces and all this. So they would try to be prepared for when there was no news. And in the stock market, I don't know. I find it weird that you're saying nothing's going to happen. But then again, you know what? It's hard to gauge what's going on, really, outside of our economy has gone to crap. And nobody wants to really admit that because nobody seems to be attracted to, you know, it doesn't get you a lot of clicks, right, to sit there and tell people, well, look, you know, this is a crap situation. You know, the stock market is going to do what it's going to do for the next year. You're not going to get a lot of readers that way. So, you know, is it driven by the readers? Is it driven by the information? I mean, I don't mean you, Mike. I'm just saying anybody, right? Like, what do you do if there's not going to be much to report? Do you just produce filler? Well, I know you don't want to do that just because I know you. But, you know, other people, look, they got to keep the clicks coming, don't they? So it's a conundrum at the
least. Especially, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, this is a real problem with, you know, the biggest example of this or that's most visible to people is Jim Cramer because he's on television every night for an hour.
This guy, yeah.
And is forced to say something. And people make fun of him because he acts crazy and talks crazy because of this. And, you know, I haven't watched the show in a long time, but, you know, he'll have to do segments that are just filler a lot of the time. But anyway, that's just, but what I'm hoping to do is spend more time doing historical research and try to do some serious writing in that aspect too. And, you know, we just had these JFK additional files come out in December, last year, and perhaps there'll be some more, but honestly, there's all sorts of files already there that need to be analyzed and even more that no one's ever looked at.
Right.
Oh,
and by the way, did you finish that book on Vietnam? Because you were talking about that last time we got together regarding that book on Vietnam where there was a different sort of slant on JFK's withdrawal. I mean, do you want to talk about that any, or are you going to save that for the article?
Oh, I'm not going to put that in the article. I just, since we're talking about it, I'll just tell you that I guess the book is called The Kennedy Withdrawal. It came out by a person at this UVA Miller Center. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because, you know, the book is really written in opposition to John Newman, Peter Dale Scott, other authors. Mm-hmm. They're not the only two, but Fletcher Prouty would be another one.
Oh, Jim DiEugenio. There's a lot of authors.
But in the text of the book, he doesn't mention any of them by name, but he does footnote and reference the Newman and Peter Dale Scott works. And one paragraph in the book, he expresses annoyance that says something to the effect that books have come out that have influenced people's popular books, thick as even the phrase used, something like that. But these books have come out that have influenced people's views on the withdrawal. Now, it's interesting for me to read this because, frankly, I'm very familiar with the source material.
Right.
Most of it. He's got some additional that's interesting. But
well, that's the only thing that got me through like half of the Bugliosi book is that I was familiar with the source material he was attacking, at least. And, you know, and that's what Bugliosi did is pretty much say, look, I'm going to give you my opposition to everything I can think of in the JFK, you know, conspiracy genre, if you will. And he went after it, quite frankly, only giving a compliments to a very few people and strange people that he did give compliments to, a strange collection. But, I mean, that sometimes people write books to address other books. And, you know, Bugliosi's whole 2,000-page ridiculous tome was just that. You know, along with this narrative that, again, it's titled under his authorship, but I don't know if it is his authorship. Anyway, along with the ridiculous narrative where he creates a story in which, you know, he's got dialogue going back and forth between Maria and Lee and everything. Marina and Lee, excuse me, and everything. So, you know, these guys do this from time to time where one writer challenges another, and sometimes they just describe it as a general genre of books that they're in opposition to, even though you know exactly what they're talking about if you've read the source material, right?
Yeah, exactly. For example, one of the funny ironies of this book is that it actually provides more evidence that the withdrawal was real. So,
well, yeah.
But he has a spin on it. Mm-hmm. But some of the more evidence that it's real, for example, he has some more details about this October 1963 trip that Maxwell Taylor and Robert McNamara went on to South Vietnam. Now, Fletcher Prouty really made this trip real famous. He claimed that he assisted Victor Krulak in writing a report that advocated for a withdrawal, or had withdrawal planning in it, and Kennedy signed off on, which became NSAM 263.
Right, and which is often...
A lot of people have doubted Prouty, called him a fraud, and so forth. And I've, you know, I don't believe everything Prouty has said. And, you know, I don't, for example, he's kind of fingered Lansdale as being a mastermind of assassination or implied this. I don't believe that. But he was the person he said he was. He did have the position he had. And ironically, this book says that Victor Krulak was in Washington, D.C., and as this trip was going on and the plane that they're on was coming back home, that he did write a lot of the report. So I don't doubt Prouty's story in that effect. Now, one interesting detail in here that I didn't was new to me was that it has McNamara. Mm-hmm. It describes on the airplane trip back several of the other people that went on the trip, State Department people. They didn't like the withdrawal idea and wanted it taken out of this report.
Right.
And McNamara and Taylor were insistent that it be in there. One of them said, we're on orders to do it. So, but Taylor was real insistent on it. And then they had a meeting when they got back. They met Kennedy in the Oval Office briefly, and there's a photo of that. But they had two meetings, National Security Council meetings. Bundy was there, different officials. And I've only seen very small excerpt of this thing. And this guy has quotes, you know, that I hadn't seen before.
Mm-hmm.
These meetings have not been transcribed in any place where they're available to the public.
Right.
You can listen to them, but they haven't been transcribed, you can find a transcript. And that's a problem with the Kennedy tapes, that they've been transcribed up to the end of 62.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the 1963 stuff, you just have to listen to it. Well, according to this, the McNamara said something to the effect that, first of all, the withdrawal plan was to withdraw 1,000 troops by the end of 1963, and then withdraw the rest of them. And that doesn't necessarily mean there'd be no Americans, but withdraw the bulk of the troops by the end of 1965. And the idea was that their mission, by being in South Vietnam, was to train the South Vietnamese army. And McNamara says something to the effect that, well, you know, we need a way out. That's a quote I'd heard before. But he basically says something to the effect that, you know, the training mission's over, so it's over. You know, in other words, it wasn't contingent in his mind on victory or defeat of South Vietnam. It was simply a training mission, and to train their army. And well, if they're trained, they're trained, and the role is for the Americans is done with. So that's a wording of this explanation of the withdrawal thing that makes it more concrete in my mind what it was. Now, in this meeting, Kennedy asked questions, and which I've seen him do in a lot of the meetings I've looked at.
Mm-hmm.
But the author makes out this to say that this means that Kennedy isn't totally in agreement with this idea, and then when the withdrawal plan is first mentioned by McNamara, which was in the spring of 1961, and as far as I know, Newman is the first person to have brought that to light. But it's mentioned in the, I mean, someone must have mentioned it before him, because it's mentioned in the Pentagon Papers.
Mm-hmm.
And Roswell Gilpatrick, in a oral, who is McNamara's Assistant Secretary of Defense, in a oral interview at the Kennedy Library, which is mentioned, that this is fascinating because it's mentioned in the James Douglas book, and he quotes him as basically saying that this whole withdrawal thing was a plan put together by Kennedy and McNamara working together, and it was really on Kennedy's behest. Well, what's interesting is that at one point, I tried to find this oral history and read it myself, and it had been reclassified, so I couldn't access it.
Right.
And then a couple years went by, and then it became open again, and I downloaded the whole thing. And there's all sorts of interesting stuff in there. For instance, when it comes to Fletcher Prouty, I discovered that Prouty had claimed that Alan Dulles he claimed that Alan Dulles got Lansdale to be a colonel, resistance in the military.
Right,
to that.
Dulles had him promoted, according to Prouty. I forget exactly what the promotion was, but I remember that,
But in the Roswell Gilpatrick thing, he says that, I don't even remember why he's talking about this, but he said that McNamara's office got that done over, you know, is sort of a reward for not being he wanted it to be the ambassador of South Vietnam. He didn't get what he wanted, and they finagled this promotion to colonel. But anyway, it's kind of a small little thing. It's not important in the big scheme of things. But so the author, though, of this book claims that, well, that the whole withdrawal plan was basically McNamara's plan and not really Kennedy's. that McNamara came up with it and pushed it, and Kenny was more of a bystander. So therefore, you know, if Kenny wasn't killed, he probably wouldn't have done the withdrawal because it's all McNamara's plan. But as I'm saying, you know, that's contradicted by Gilpatrick in the Pentagon Papers. Now, The guy has a footnote about the Pentagon Papers and just says that's what's in there, but they don't provide a documentation and dismisses it. So to me, the guy is just like, it's kind of like a lawyer, you know, trying to argue this one point, no matter what. But despite that, you know, he has interest in information that some that is new. And I mean, there's no denying that the withdrawal plan was real. There was one period of time where people pretended or tried to argue it wasn't even a real thing.
Well, right. Look, and that's a long way around to say, look, there's some interesting information here, but the fact is that the guy ends up providing, you know, a bunch of things that if you were to read it objectively, you probably still come down on the idea that this was in motion and seems to be the reality of it. Even if he's just arguing that, you know, Kennedy was doing this to signal something as opposed to what the real plan is, it's impossible to unravel that, really, you know, given the fact that he died right at a pivotal moment. So, you know, here we go.
Now, I want to make one other point about this. I mentioned this last week, but I went and looked up the details before coming on some of the figures. But I was saying last week to you that everyone ignores the North Vietnamese in this discussion.
Right.
And they, in 1961, Kennedy, you know, approves sending more aid, these advisors to South Vietnam, and they start to arrive really and make a change. And the helicopters appear in 1962. And they actually are, you know, the statistics, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that the North Vietnamese and the insurgency in South Vietnam was having setbacks because of this influx of American assistance. And the tide slowly starts to change. They adapt to the tactics that they're now, these new tactics that they're now facing.
Right.
In 1963, there's a battle that in which a bunch of helicopters are down. I think an American or two is killed. And it looks like a defeat for the South Vietnamese, although we did kill a good number of the other side. But it's, you know, the situation really starts to deteriorate. And there's programs that don't work. Mm-hmm. The whole strategic Hamlet thing was basically a fraud. There really were hardly any that were functional. Mm-hmm. There are claims to be, you know, thousands of these things, and there's probably just a dozen or two. The people that they're being put together by South Vietnamese people, supposedly, and they're reporting what they're doing, and they didn't want to report that they weren't succeeding, I suppose.
Right.
But to not just to the Americans, but to to Diem and his brother New, you know.
Right.
But the thing is that I wanted to make sure my memory was correct, and I've got a volume that's a Vietnamese history of the war.
Right.
It's translated in English. I mean, this is the North Vietnamese, now the current, you know, the Democratic Republic of Vietnam, the people we fought against.
All right. So now we're talking about the American War of Aggression as opposed to, you know, the Vietnam War, which is...
Yeah, this book is titled Victory in Vietnam.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
But anyway, according to it, you know, what I just told you, they admit they're facing setbacks and so forth. And they have a phrase for this phase of the war. Oh, they talk about helicopter assaults.
We have a transitional time here, okay, where...
They call the period where Kennedy was president an American special war strategy. And in 1963, well, before 1963, they didn't... The North Vietnamese... Well, first of all, the North Vietnamese army was about 125,000 people, soldiers, in North Vietnam. And they were giving, you know, a small, I would say a small amount of support to the South Vietnamese.
Right.
Basically, they weren't necessarily trying to score some quick win. They're just supporting them, keeping them going. And, when
it's a transitional time period because you go from a point in the war where there's a support aspect of it from the Americans going to the South Vietnamese, and it appears as though there may have just been that role in mind from the American perspective. Then you take a look at what's going on regarding the North Vietnamese and their actions. There is a shift at this time, just before the assassination, looks like, where they now are going for a win because they're about to see a withdrawal, so they want to make sure that withdrawal is encouraged. They believe they're going to see a withdrawal. So they're planning and preparing for that, not a ramping up, not an increase in personnel. They believe that that's what's going on. Just as we see the paperwork going through here, that's what's apparently going to go on. And this does indeed change once Kennedy's dead and is, you know, memorialized later after the Gulf of Tonkin incident. But honestly, the movement started to change immediately. And
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, it boils down to.
Go ahead.
And, yeah, no, I'm just saying that's what it boils down to. The North Vietnamese even believed from what they were seeing that they were looking at a withdrawal. That's what it comes down to. And look, I love going through this historical stuff. And if you want to read, you know, a specific excerpt or whatever from whatever it is you have, I mean, obviously go ahead and support it. But if not, I say we take a break and we can move on.
I just want to read one, mention one point here.
Sure.
In 1963... They say they had 40,000, the North Vietnamese had 40,000 full-time soldiers in South Vietnam, serving as advisors, basically.
Right.
And they claim that there were double, roughly, the amount of guerrillas. And when, and as you said, they thought Kennedy had a withdrawal plan. I mean, it was public news. Now, I've seen other books, not, you know, or I've seen it mentioned, I believe it, that they interpreted the overthrow of Diem and then the death of Kennedy as an escalation on the part of the Americans. Well, according to this book, in December 1963, which is after Kennedy's killed, they decided they no longer believe this so-called special war was being fought by the Americans, but the phrase they use is an American limited war. And they thought that the Americans were going to start, you know, to escalate, intervene, and so forth. So they decided to fully mobilize.
Right.
And start sending battalions of soldiers into South Vietnam with the hope of having a complete victory as soon as they could before the Americans came.
Well, they were looking to cut off the escalation before it actually set in so that, look, now we've taken everything. That's the end of it. There's nothing to escalate here. It's done. That was the hope there, right? That was the strategy.
Yeah, and they went from 120,000 troops at the in 1963 to over 300,000 by the end of 64.
Right.
And they knew, the book says Johnson, I don't think this is their, they said Johnson, who had just replaced Kennedy as president of the United States, decided to carry out a secret program called Switchback, turning the operations of the see over to the military. Mm-hmm. That is a true name of that. You know, that is what happened.
Well,
but,
and the idea was in play there that you know that CIA many CIA operations were supposed to be handed over to the DIA. You know, as far as I knew, that was something that was in play when Kennedy was still alive. So they're using that explanation to account for.
Well, this is all of this is a long-winded, you know, way to say. Look, if Kennedy had lived, would the North Vietnamese have been doing this stuff? Would they have sent battalions and tried to in 1964 and escalated or not? Would they have just said, well, they got this plan to train everyone and, and by 1965, so would they have been, you know, doing this stuff? Probably not.
Well, in other words, this is not a continuation of something that was already in progress. This is a change. This is a shift as opposed to, and that's really the funny thing is that that's what Newman's argument is effectively, except that that change would have resulted in the end of this by 65, not 75, you know? So you got another 10 years in. Because this didn't happen, which is a reasonable argument. Of course, we don't know what could have occurred that could have changed the direction or the trajectory of the operation, so on and so forth. And I understand that argument, but it looks to me like if things were to continue as they were, we would have had to withdraw by the end of 65. All personnel. Looked to me like that's that. You know, what can I say? But I think we need to take a little break. And then shift time periods along with subjects, because there's a lot more stuff we could cover. I mean, look, we'll continue to cover and look back at the Vietnam War. And, of course, you're going to be writing about this some more and everything else. So I'm fascinated by it and definitely think it is worthy of reexamination and again reexamination because it's a pivotal moment in our recent history. But I think maybe we take a break and move on to some other topics. What do you say, Mike?
Sure, sounds good.
Excellent. Mike Swanson, WallStreetWindow.com, of course, author of The War State and Why the Vietnam War. Gee, why is that relevant to tonight? Anyway, maybe we'll get into what's going on now and what the government's doing in the next segment of The Ocelli Effect. Stick around.
Revelation through conversation.
WallStreetWindow.com. Gold, silver, the stock market. WallStreetWindow.com. Perhaps you're invested deeply. Perhaps you're not in deep enough. Maybe you're thinking about getting started. WallStreetWindow.com. Michael Swanson, the brilliant author of The War State, understood these trends professionally for many years, and now he gives you the benefit of his knowledge. WallStreetWindow.com. Go there now.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Do you like history, real history, that you were never taught in schools? Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia. By author Mike Swanson, with new documentation never seen before. That'll open your eyes to events that led up to this. Why? The Vietnam War, nuclear bombs and nation building in Southeast Asia, 1945 through 1961. Get your copy today at Amazon.com. Why? The Vietnam War by author Mike Swanson.
You're listening to the Ocelli.com radio network.
The War State by Michael Swanson explains the great national transformation that took place and put the Kennedy presidency in the context of the times and reveals never-before-published information about the Cuban Missile Crisis. President Kennedy would not have been assassinated if he had been president 200 years ago. His assassination took place in the context of the Cold War and the rise of the national security state. Before World War II, the United States was a continental republic. In the decade that followed, it became an imperial superpower. Generals such as Curtis LeMay not only wanted to invade Cuba, but knew that there were short-range missiles on the island armed with nuclear warheads that they could not destroy because they were on mobile launchers. Their invasion could have led to a third world war, and they wanted to go to war anyway. The War State by Michael Swanson reveals why and will show you what President Kennedy was up against. For more information, thewarstate.com.
Revelation through conversation.
Ocelli.com.
Learn from our relatively recent history, my brother. That's where I'm coming from. I'll be all pharmaceutical.
And now, the most underrated voice in all media. Chuck Ocelli.
The second segment of the Ocelli Effect tonight here on a Thursday. Mike Swanson with me. Be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. We got about 23 minutes left, actually, with Mike, because we started about 5 minutes late, but we've been discussing the Vietnam conflict and all that. Of course, go to WallStreetWindow.com. It is not just about Wall Street. You might see Vietnam discussed over there, and you might see some other stuff discussed over there, including current events of all sorts, not just written by Mike, but some other people he's got over there and some other stuff. Check it all out at WallStreetWindow.com. Anyways, Mike, let's pivot straight away. I mean, should we talk about other things over our heads? I mean, we definitely went into the balloon one time recently. So, you know, we've been talking about that, but now there's other objects. And boy, you can't make some people happy. When they don't shoot them down, it's a problem. When they do shoot them down, it's a problem. You know, you have thoughts about that, or you got something else on your mind?
Well, when this news item first came up, we were talking about it, I think, the day it started, and I think we both thought it was sort of silly.
Well, I thought it might be a fake story at first because it was so weird. But
yeah, that's right. You thought it was so silly it could be a fake, and soon afterwards, though, they shot it down off of Myrtle Beach in South Carolina.
Yep.
And I know people that live there. And they were posting on, one of them was posting on Facebook that they heard people cheering when the thing was shot out of the sky. Now, when we were talking about it before it was shot down, I was joking around because I just thought it was a silly kind of story, you know. And I always said, well, this, and I was just joking when I said this, but the whole balloon could be a prelude to an attack. And well, I thought it was a joke, but you know, as after it was shot down, more objects appear in the sky. They're reported in the news and over and over again, nonstop, and a lot of outrage in the Senate, people on television outraged, scared. This is really a dangerous thing happening. Aggression from China.
Well, right, and I thought about where. Yeah, I thought about calling it the Battle for Myrtle Beach, because you remember the Battle for Los Angeles, right? That whole trope in history that occurred there with the, you know, the aliens, but the Battle for Myrtle Beach, because people were cheering and really, really happy that you know, we used what a $10,000 missile or something to shoot it down, and you know, what was
well,
it important?
It was historic though, because. Mm-hmm. That battle over the balloon was the first, you know, dogfight an F-22 had ever been in.
Okay. I don't believe that the balloon was armed, so I'm not sure how much of a fight it was, but there was talk about how precise it was. Of course, they had knocked it. You know, the strike was had at exactly the point to disconnect the balloon from the apparatus and so on. I know all that now, but interesting how this has evolved, right? Now we have objects, and nobody's calling them balloons. They're objects, right? They are literally UAPs until further notice.
Well, I see one headline saying that there's a hobby club, a balloon hobby club, that thinks one of their balloons was shot down by the Air Force. Mm-hmm. And then there's a story I saw several days ago. It said that a lot of this... You there?
Yeah, I'm here. You paused.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It just started ringing. There's a story I saw that said that a lot of this is just stuff in the, that's just in the sky a lot. You know, balloons, drones.
Right.
Who knows what. And some of these devices people send up, and they lose control of them. They fly too far out of the range of being controlled, mm-hmm. and they just get thrown up into the atmosphere by the winds, and just who knows how far they go. Or, you know, someone, a little boy can have a balloon, right. and let go of it, and it goes up in the air. They could be, who knows, you know. I suspect, and I think this is what's been in the news, that after the first balloon from China happened, that in all this outrage and the hitting the news cycle, which you wonder if it's deliberate, if the Air Force wanted this all to create a panic.
Yeah,
for Space Force purposes.
Now, not only Space Force, but just to justify their budgets. I mean, it's awfully useful. Now we have a reason for air patrols and everything else, because we don't know what all the objects are. There could be spy balloons. I bet this is going to justify somebody's budget. And I'll tell you something else. I was watching the news conference earlier.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I caught it live. And, you know, it's... I'm laughing already. I'm sorry. I got to report with a straight face about it, right? Biden directly addressing this issue, right? The stuff overhead and his statements about it. And, you know, he wanted to make the point repeatedly that none of this has been identified as hostile. It does not appear to be any balloons that, you know, like the last one. None of these things, got up to the height in the air that the other balloon had. It wasn't at the altitude of that, you know, that huge balloon that everybody followed for a week, right? It wasn't that high of an altitude, and literally he was saying that it could have endangered air traffic, some of these objects, because they were at the height that, you know, an average commercial traffic might be at. And these things have been shot down and yada yada, so he explains all this, and, you know, I'm not sure who's going to fall asleep faster, me or him, during his press conference, but I'm watching it, and he closes it out, and then he says he wants to take questions. And he's been now kind of harassed by some of these conservative, you know, upstarts, you know, the different networks out there now that are gaining traction on cable and satellite, right? News Nation and, you know, what was that other one? AON was really popular. You know, Trump pumped it up. I don't know if it's doing well now, but Newsmax is doing real well. Anyway, one of the reporters in that sort of sub-directory of media has been on Biden about stuff, and immediately he jumped into it and said, you know, is there a conflict of interest here, sir, because of all your family's business with China? Now, I am paraphrasing the question, okay? But effectively, that's what the guy asked. He did a pretty long-winded sort of thing. And then it was like, well, you know, your business interests with China and the conflicts of interest because of your son, Hunter, and all this. And Biden picked up his stuff and said, look, you know what? You want to come to my office and ask me that question or something like this? And he walked away. And the reporters were sitting there like shouting questions at him. And he just, you know, did the slow Joe walk. You know what he does? You know when he like walks away real slow and he just shuffled away, and I'm like, wow, that's a bad look. I mean, you know, I realize the reporter went kind of off topic, but he tried to fold it into the discussion of the day, which is these unidentified objects, right? There's been, three of them this week. So, okay. He explains it and then says, I want questions. And then somebody goes, well, some of these things could be from China, like that other balloon. So how about your conflicts of interest with China? You know, and one of the comments during the press conference was, you know, at some point I'll be talking to, what is it, President Xi? I think you say the first name first, right? Xi Jinping, I know, but I think he says President Xi. I'll be talking to him soon. But, you know, they haven't been forthright about these things or whatever. And, yeah, he questioned him about his conflicts of interest and his business interests with China. And Biden just, yeah, well, you can come to my office and ask me that question or ask my office that question or something. And then proceeded to shuffle away. Even though he said, I'll take questions. So I said, well, the most benign way to look at that is not a good look, Joe. Really, it looks like, they asked me a tough question. I'm not doing it. And meanwhile, I bet you all these other reporters, I mean, they really, the one guy was real loud from that news outlet, and I don't remember which one it is, but I swear to you, look it up online. It's one of those conservative ones. I'm not sure if it's Ruddy's thing or if it's, you know, the OAN, or I think, I'm suspecting it might be a News Nation guy, but that's that network that hired, you know, Fredo Cuomo over there. You know, and constantly has Bill O'Reilly as a guest trying to get some of that conservative juice flowing. But it's just these mini conservative networks. This is what they're going after. And anything, if this guy shows up to talk about candy bars, if he does an Easter egg hunt, well, that's coming up pretty soon, isn't it? The White House Easter egg hunt. If he does that, this guy's going to be like, yeah, what about eggs and your relation to China? This is what this guy's going to do. And apparently they're not prepared to answer this question. They haven't prepped Joe for it. So, yeah, take a look at that piece of footage, Mike. I'm sure it's on YouTube now.
Yeah, I'll take a look at it. It's pretty crazy.
It's kind of striking and really smacks of somebody who doesn't want to handle that in public. You know, say what
well,
you
there's want. There's an article today on the Politico website saying that there's a lot of Democrats, governors and senators, that don't really want him to run, but they can't say that publicly because there's no, they don't see any alternative to Biden.
No, see,
so
I
like
think,
stuck with
yeah, I think they're right about this. I think a lot of the Democrats are like sitting there hoping that the Hunter Biden laptop kneecaps Joe, basically, in for running. So that he has to turn around and say, you know what, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, but they're afraid that they don't. They're afraid if he doesn't run. What the article said, they're afraid if he doesn't run.
My next point: who else do they got? Who else
they would have
to
deal with Kamala running?
Yeah, well, see,
or Miss Harris running.
Kamala, give me a break.
Kamala.
Kamala, don't forget, right? Kamala running. Yeah, that's a guaranteed loser. I have even heard stirrings in some corners that it's possible that they might try to run, God help us all, Hillary again. I mean, it's one bad idea to the next with the Democrats, isn't it? You know, let's see if we can put up the most ridiculous candidate for the POTUS, and we'll run them against Trump and see how that works out. It didn't work out too well last time for you. Gotta tell you, the last time they put a really obviously bad one up against Trump. But anyway, you know, Biden seemed to be a more sane alternative to Trump, maybe, to some people. But now, look, objectively, can anybody argue this guy doesn't look tired, overwhelmed? You know what I mean? How does that look? And also, how's your economy doing? Does it just suck for you? You know, I'm just saying, what can this guy even run on at this point? I think, yeah, they need to get him out of the way, but they're afraid that they've got nobody to put in his place. So, I don't know. It seems ready-made for a return of Trump in 2024. I hate to say it, but I've said this already. I honestly feel like he'll be reinstalled in 2024. I really do. If not, though, you know, look, we also got confronted this week with Nikki Haley's announcement formally, right? She went and did her little production.
Now, did you watch her? I didn't actually watch it.
Yeah, I watched that too. I do all this just to try and stay informed, right? Oh God.
Well, how did she come off?
Well, let me put it to you in a nutshell, okay? You know, I'm not Trump, but America's in trouble because Biden is destroying it. And I'm going to come here and I'm going to make things better. I am the answer. After all, I am younger and stronger, and let's go. And then they literally did the whole, you know, they're kind of ripping off Trump a bit. They're stealing some of his game. They actually played Eye of the Tiger. You know, the old Survivor song?
Get out of here.
I'm not kidding. I swear. Look at, go ahead, find that footage on YouTube as well. I'm telling you what I torture myself with and wind up laughing at. They're playing the 80s tropes, you know. Let's do a montage next, guys. We're all going to fix up the place so that the rich kids don't knock down our community.
Would you think
next,
a lot of people,
you know,
believe it, that she could do all this and fix everything?
I think a lot of people are looking for somebody to fix everything, just like they have been many times. Depending on your perspective, it's the auditions for David. He did a great song, and he said they're openly holding auditions for David was one of the lines. They're looking for a savior to rebuild the temple here, is what the idea is. And, you know, we're going to make America great again. We're going to make America greater. We're going to save America. All of those slogans that Trump has pumped out. And, but believe me, they're willing to sell it to you on everything. You know, from your very own yard sign to a brand new flag. They've even.
Well, they don't need to get everyone to buy it, just like 30% of people or something.
No, hey, look, they sold their NFT collector cards, too, for $100 a pop. I mean, somebody will, and they sold right out. You know, I mean, there's even Trump DeSantis flags out there available for purchase. I don't know if they're prominent on the website now. I got to check my daily marketing emails from the Trump 2024 campaign because I get them every day. But, you know, they'll sell you anything. You know.
Well, what about Pence? What's he waiting for? Isn't he supposed to be running?
Well, you know what's funny about that is somebody asked me about that earlier, and I said to myself, I said out loud, actually, I can't remember if he actually announced he's running or not. But he...
I don't think so.
He suggested that he is. He's made statements like he could, but he hasn't, I don't think... But even if he did make the announcement, would anybody even notice, you know? The guy blends into white walls like a chameleon. I mean, you know, ready-made. So, I mean, this is the guy to ignore. I mean, he is, my God, you know, Pence, no. You know, and actually, maybe...
Do you think he's gay?
I'm not one of those guys. I don't make that judgment. I think he's weird. I don't know if he's gay. I don't think so. He may indeed be somebody who is truly in the...
I mean, it just like the J. Edgar Hoover thing, and he looks weird, too, you know?
No, I know, but no, it's not like a
J. Edgar. Or Joseph McCarthy and Roy Cohn, those fellas. I mean, they all...
Yeah, but those guys, evidence. Look, there's evidence of that. I wouldn't go that far with Pence, but I've heard people suggest it. You know, with his Billy Graham rules and his very weird... Yeah, I know, but I don't go
there.
Oh,
yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, I don't go there. I mean, I think he could indeed be a true believer in the
matter.
Boy Scouts. No, what I'm saying is forget all that. He could be a true believer in the Boy Scouts. I would believe that he's one of those guys who believes in Scouts honor and all that. It could be. But then again, all possibilities are there. It's just that his public persona and his ability to market himself and everything else amounts to zero. It's just, you know, he's boring. He's boring. He's not interesting.
Well,
he doesn't engage.
The fly landed on his head. That was exciting.
Now here's a fun thing. Do you remember in 2016 that there was a vice presidential debate, like, you know, for the candidates? Do you remember that? Probably not.
Oh, the other guy's terrible, too.
Well, no. What was it? Ryan was his name? I think he's still somewhere in government. But anyway, yeah, Ryan.
No, I can't even remember his name, man. He was the
guy for Hillary.
He's from Virginia. He's a senator from Virginia. And I live in Virginia, and I can't remember his name.
Oh, was he? Because I don't even remember that much.
Yeah.
Well, the point is that I watched that whole
debate.
He was
the governor here at one time.
Okay. I will take your word for it, because watching that was like hypnosis. It was like just forgetting.
It was Kane.
Kane?
Kane, yeah, that's his name.
Okay. I still won't. Tim Kane, right? Tim Kane?
Tim Kane, that's it. Okay. Yeah, you got it.
Okay, well, good. I just screwed up his name, too. See how memorable he is? and versus Pence. You know, I said at the time, and I stick by it, I mean, it was sleepy time. It was like watching static on a TV. And also I said that it was like watching mayonnaise and rice fight in a paper plate in a jar of mayonnaise. I mean, it was that white, and just, it was literally white noise. I remember nothing from that debate at all. There was nothing, and I sat through the whole thing. I know I sat through the whole thing. I remember sitting through the whole thing and saying to myself, I've got absolutely nothing to talk about. There is nothing to this. They were on a stream. I don't remember if it was I think it was TV. I think it was nationally broadcast. I'm not even sure.
Jesus, who was the...
Yeah.
John Kerry's vice presidential running mate. Do you remember?
No, I don't remember
that. Because they would
have... Yeah.
They would have debated... Cheney.
Yeah, but see, who wants to do that? So I don't remember if they did it, but I'm just saying I know that this debate
existed.
No, they
did it. I just can't remember.
But you ever, like, read a book and you realize you retain nothing from it? I mean, I know you're probably smarter than me, so it's not, you know.
No, that happens when the books are very, you know, they're not written very well. That happens.
Okay, so you watch a TV show or a movie, right? And the movie's so bad that you're like, well, I can't really even tell you what happened. Like, somebody goes, well, what was the movie like? You go, it just sucked. You know, and they're like, well, give me details now.
Well, that's what was starting to happen in those Yellowstone episodes in the last season here.
Oh, well, see, I didn't even watch that. But I'm just saying, like, but when something gets that bad and it is devoid of entertainment, energy, or information of any kind, it's just, it's like lost time. I swear to God, I would have had more of a memory of it watching static on an old broadcast TV. I mean, just static. Now, no show, just static, something in between the channels. I would have retained a better memory of it. I know I ate something and I watched that. That's all I can recall about it. And I think that happened to me like hours later. That's all I had. I mean, it was like hypnosis. I don't know what to tell you about it. Anyway, why did I even go into this? Oh, because you brought up Mike Pence. Look, and I think he's running, but does anybody know? Does anybody care? They're not going to. The guy was a seat filler for Trump. That's all he was. You know, so, and Kamala might as well be a seat filler, because nobody is going to elect, nobody with a straight face is going to want to elect her. I mean, for God's sake, no, if you're progressive, she was a cop.
Yeah,
basically.
But does she know that?
Look, I'm not going to pretend to know what's in her mind. I'm not. I won't even try. But who knows?
Hubert, I mean, I was reading some stuff yesterday about, you know, I know Johnson was told this, but
yeah.
Hubert Humphrey, because I saw that Hubert Humphrey had a phone call with Johnson, and it's like, I was like, what was he doing at that time? He was a senator, and he didn't become vice president until 1964. And I found that he didn't want to run for president. He ran for president in 1961, and Kane defeated him in the Democratic primaries, and he decided that he wasn't good at running, and he didn't want to run for president, but he was willing to become a vice president, because that, he thought, was his best chance to be president. Well, eventually he does run for president, and got clocked in the primaries twice.
Oh, Hubert Humphrey,
72.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, maybe that's what Kamala was thinking. You know, she can get in that way if Biden resigns or
somebody mentioned in the chat room that they watched the Edwards versus Cheney debate.
That's who it was. Yeah. Oh, Lord, that character, yeah, John Edwards.
Just trying to give that to you real fast, but you know,
oh jeez,
if you want to talk Hubert
Humphrey,
forgot
all about him.
Right. Right. So, but you see, very forgettable.
And he was one of these manufactured people, too.
If he did.
He was from North Carolina.
Yep.
And he said that he had a poor background.
Uh-huh.
and that his parents worked in textile plants.
Yeah, but you wouldn't remember this guy if he didn't have a sex scandal. I mean, let's be honest. Otherwise,
that's that is what happened to him.
Yeah.
He was giving money, campaign money, to some girlfriend.
Yeah, right.
Something
and then,
like that.
Well, and then he gets busted. I think he's another one of these, like his wife had cancer, so he's running around, this kind of thing, which, you know,
yeah,
not a good look. And all right, but that's Edwards. Forget about him for a second. You know what it reminds me of, really, is George H.W. Bush. This guy, there was no way he was going to become president on his own, so he comes in with Reagan. And because he was another guy who was supposed to run and this and that, and just boring, no presentation, just awful, right? And even when he was in office, it was like, well, he's wimpy, right? Remember that? The whole thing, he's wimpy. Because he just, well, he speaks really softly, and I'm going to tell you that America, you know. I mean, this guy literally, if I remember correctly, was it him or Reagan who brought crack cocaine on like, on camera? Was it him or was it Reagan who did that?
I think Reagan did it.
I think Reagan did it. But I'm telling you, if Bush did it, you'd forget about it because it just wouldn't even be memorable. The guy was just, he just doesn't project a good presence. You know, and especially doesn't translate on television. H.W. Bush was never meant to be a charismatic a politician of any kind. You know, and there's a bunch of these guys like that. And I'm thinking to myself, it's like take George H.W. Bush and make him even more boring. And you got Mike Pence.
Yeah.
You know, a slightly less CIA based background, but. You know, still, as a politician, like, how the hell does any... And you could see it. This guy lost a lot of elections before he won in Texas, H.W. He lost a bunch of times. I think for the Senate, the House, governor once, maybe. Awful. Just not really a likable or projectable or interesting character. Like, say what you will about Donald Trump. He was interesting. So much so that they built entire, programming schedules on television around him. Love him or hate him, whatever, you had to tune in to watch him, right?
Well, if we were young enough, or old enough, I mean, I wonder if we would say, if we would have thought that Carter and Nixon and LBJ were interesting as personalities.
Well, okay. See, but Carter had a warmth to him. LBJ, though, was pretty bad because when he would, if you remember the statement when he lands the plane in Washington, he says, I will do my best.
Yeah.
He's clearly reading. You know, I mean, he wasn't exactly the slickest guy. He was good in a back room, LBJ.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Nixon just made people uncomfortable. He was just automatically not likable. And that's, I think, just a character trait he carried with him his whole life. But he was at least shrewd about it. Carter, I would say, was shrewd about it. But Pence, not shrewd. He doesn't even play that role well. You know, where it's like he doesn't even push it forward that I'm just a conservative, modest. He doesn't do it. No warmth to it at all. It's just, I'm Mike Pence, and I am here to bore you. And I'm telling you, it's like hypnosis. It's awful. Forget about his policies, his thoughts, anything else. The guy has no personality. It's more exciting to watch a dead fish.
Well, that's why The Fly was interesting when he had the debate and The Fly landed on his head.
That's what I was going
to. It was like, how long will it take before he notices it? He never did.
Yeah.
So
that
made the debate fun to watch.
Right. And to the chat room, I realize the whole crack cocaine picture. That's why I brought it up, is because I saw it recently and I was thinking about it. But no, I remember, but I couldn't remember if Reagan did it too, is the thing. So maybe it was, I couldn't remember if Reagan did it too. I didn't word it right. But, no, it's so funny. This is crack cocaine. I import this. Oh, cut that part out. It's being imported,
right? Yeah.
You know, it wasn't too long after that. I think we got the Iran-Contra stuff, right? Anyways, you know, at least we got the information on it. It was going on before that. Which, by the way, last media question I have for you, unless you got another something in mind you want to bring up, and we didn't even really go through what I wanted to go through. But Cocaine Bear, have you been getting hit with these commercials for Cocaine Bear?
No, what's that?
Mike, you avoid so much media that I have to torture myself with everywhere.
Is it on television?
No,
is it a movie?
I'll tell you. Unfortunately, I know the answer to this.
I just typed in Google, it's a movie?
It's a movie. Yes, you can go ahead and run it through your search engine of choice, but I'll tell you what I know. It's a movie, and they are marketing the hell out of it, and they want you to go to theaters to see Cocaine Bear. Now, I don't endorse this. However, interesting that it is at least partially based on a true story. Why do I bring this up? Cocaine Bear, it is just what it sounds like, folks. A bear gets a hold of cocaine, and wackiness ensues. Might be a little dark, too. Realistically, they tried a bunch of different ways, dropping off stuff, trying to bring it into the U.S. and Arkansas and Florida and other places that I happen to personally know are real things, not conspiracy theory. There was different ways of dropping off drugs. And instead of landing planes, they also tried just, you know, dropping things in areas and going back and picking it up when they got on the ground, right? So if you throw some big bales of cocaine into some woods, once in a while the animals might get a hold of it. So I've heard tell of deer and other animals actually getting a hold of cocaine, going crazy, dropping dead, heart attack, etc. Apparently they made a movie out of a big old brown bear getting a hold of some cocaine and going, well, a little bit buck wild. Although, again, not a buck, a bear. Yeah, it's a thing. And it's apparently getting marketed hard. I don't know what they're spending, but I'll tell you that every time I go to YouTube, I go to a news site, and they've got a video commercial that they'll play, I am stuck with Cocaine Bear. I've been getting it pounded into my head every time I go online. So I guess you're avoiding it, Mike. What can I say? I hope you don't have some open-ended ad thing on your site, because you could indeed be advertising Cocaine Bear right now and you don't know it. But yeah, partially based on a true story. I don't know where they got the account, but I do know that stories like this occurred, especially when people were dropping off large sums of cocaine and sending it out of planes on parachutes, dropping it into bodies of water. Sometimes the animals would get there quicker than the guys going to pick it up, and that's what would happen. So there you go, Mike. What are your thoughts on Cocaine Bear?
Well, that might that might be my last thought of the day, thinking about that.
You're always going to get something different when you come on my show, Mike, right? I mean, I'm always going to throw something at you you didn't expect. Is there anything else you want to cover, or should we just close it out on the bear with the cocaine?
I think that's a good way to close it out.
Fair enough.
It really is. And I'm gonna have to check into this and see your trailer for it.
The trailer. I don't know if I want to give them money to support it, but see the trailer at least. Ay, ay, ay. What can I say? I almost want to go see it, but it's terrible because my son, even my son has gotten, what does Cocaine Bear mean, Dad? He's 8 years old, and I'm like, look, I'll give you a partial explanation, but you're not going to go see this movie, Cocaine Bear, okay? I'm not going to let you go see it. I don't even know what its rating is, but I'm not exposing it to my 8-year-old, Mike, and I know a lot of 8-year-olds are probably going to see it, but... Anyway, Mike Swanson, be in the know. Go to WallStreetWindow.com. There won't be any cocaine bears there, I hope. And also, the war state, why the Vietnam War. Mike, thanks for putting up with me another week. I appreciate it. Next week you won't be here.
Oh, it's great talking with you.
Yeah, next week you won't be here, but you'll be back the week after, right?
That's right.
Excellent. I am Merely Ocelli. All of you are indeed the effect. Good night.